pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Welcome to Declarations of War. I'm your host, Alexei Avkar, joined tonight by Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And boy, do we have a packed show for you. Holy shit. Before we get into it, Noir and the network are recruiting. Noir looking for awesome pilots. We have Noir Academy if you want to become an awesome pilot, tinyurl.com/Noir Academy. And the network is looking for awesome corps. We've just picked up Lethal Dosage, which is a small PvP and Black Ops and sort of shadowy shenanigans oriented corp in general, run by some old friends of mine. And I'm really excited about having them with us, but we're always looking for more, in particular, people that love to PvP, because that is what we're all about. If you're out there listening to this and you want to be a part of the content that we talk about so much on this show, all the contracts and epic fights, join Noir, convince your corp to join the network. Hopping into our top stories, we have a new CSM. Major news.
I mean, mostly the old CSM, but still new, kind of.
Fresh coat of paint. We managed to get half of our ballot on, which is pretty good. Brisker Ball did well. We got Kenneth Feld on. We've got Mike Azariah on. We've got iBeast on. Who am I forgetting?
Sutonia,
the returning Sutonia. Pretty interesting election, the way it has shaken out. We had a slight increase in votes cast compared to last year. Overall, the votes for the last couple elections have been kind of up and down. It seems like we're pretty much in the sweet spot. But when you consider how the player population has changed, I actually think it's pretty good. Only one incumbent lost. Shout out to Noisy Gamer. That's NOSY gamer.blogspot.com. He is always my go-to for CSM election analysis. The guy runs a fantastic blog, and he has put in a breakdown. Some interesting results. A lot of folks didn't really have, it seems, that critical mass of number one support outside of people that were in the Imperium and I guess Happy? Yeah. I mean, it is a PanFam candidate that got the number one spot, Gobbins. But obviously, their alliance and coalition, it's more than that. But Bro God Legend, for instance, Vili, for instance, they were all at the end. That's interesting. I honestly don't know what to make out of it. So Noisy breaks down exactly where everybody dropped out at the various stages. Or excuse me, where they got elected at the various stages. Merkel, Ching, Gobbins, and Nominate all had enough votes to just get in. And then there was nothing until 20 rounds of elimination when Briskerville finally had enough critical mass to get in. And then it started picking up from there with Vili, Pro God Legend, and Mike Azariah barely squeaking in, and Arisa being the first alternate. And not by much. Arisa lost by 350 votes. Again, please vote. Please convince your friends to vote. Your votes do count. If you were an Arisa fan but didn't vote, you got to be kicking yourself right now.
Are we talking Arcia and I just misspelled the name somewhere again?
Arcia, sorry, that's my bad.
For the record, that is totally my fault. While I was trying to convince the team to include Arcia on our ballot, I totally misspelled her name.
I'm super happy that Sutonia's back, though. That's somewhat of a relief to me. We need that small gang numbers expertise to get these patches tuned properly. And indeed, there have been a lot of patches, and we will talk about that shortly. Any surprises for you this year, Artemis, in terms of CSM election?
Definitely the surprise to me was how well iBeast did. I was not expecting iBeast to get that much support, quite frankly. Seemed like a pretty straightforward, was going to be near the top of the ballot for the small gang community. But the big question mark in my mind was, is the Russian community a proper voting block anymore? And will they put their support behind him? And it seems like they did. So that's cool.
I don't think they're as much of a power broker block as they used to be. But of the Russian candidates running, I think he was the only one that had cross-cultural appeal because of his YouTube channel. Like, he had not just the Russian vote, but he also had the small gang vote, either at the number one spot or pretty close to it.
Yeah.
So I think the combination went to his benefit.
I figured he would lose number one slot to Cetonia at the very least. So I didn't, like, that was part of why I didn't think he would perform particularly well, is because I felt like he overlapped a bit too much with Cetonia. And so for that reason, like, most of the votes that would put him near the top would put Cetonia higher, and Cetonia would get those votes to get on.
Yeah. I don't know. Cetonia is an interesting character in that he gets a lot of Nullsec runoff, but he also has the esteem from the small gang community. But the small gangers just had a glut of candidates this year. I mean, we had low sec people. We had some notable wormhole PvPers, some notable independent PvPers. There was a lot to choose from if you were a small ganger this year, which is great because you have great options, but can be a challenge in the way the CSM election works, in that your candidate needs to have a critical mass of top slot votes to stay in it. So it's entirely possible that, you know, I mean, for instance, Phantomite didn't make it. Perhaps some of his voters had iBeast pretty high on their ballots, and he picked up some runoff there. Likewise, Cetonia voters might have had iBeast with some runoff. So he had that critical mass of Russian votes to stay in, and then he's picking up runoff from these other small gang and low-sec candidates that maybe didn't have the staying power.
Certainly interesting. I'm glad to see the number of votes are picking back up again. I don't know where to go with there. Not much of a point other than it's cool.
Nosy has put out some additional numbers, by the way. I'm just getting this to Artemis now.
You're talking his blog post?
Yeah, he put out a greater amount of detail than I had seen initially, so you could see where all the eliminations came in from.
Yeah, I'm not, like, personally particularly interested in the, like, how the eliminations ran down, apart from that one, like, slideshow presentation CCP did last year, which I haven't checked to see if they did it again this year, because that was just cool to watch. But other than that, I'm sort of like, they won. I don't particularly care how they won. Maybe that's just me.
He does highlight one interesting thing, which I didn't notice at first, but actually is pretty interesting. Winter Coalition did not have enough voting power to get their candidates through. So that would be your fraternity and their related blocks. They did run a few candidates, including one that looked like it had some promise, but just not enough.
Well, I mean, by the looks of it, most of their ballot was elected. It just weren't their particular candidates. Like, Noisy's identified Winter Coalition ballot was Kenneth Feld, Rich Richmond, Pro-God, Gobbins, Seto, Villy, Phantomite, Arcia, Angry Mustache, Maldavius. And that had like 1,000 votes on it. So like Kenneth, he got on, Pro-God got on, Gobbins got on, Villy got on. So.
Yeah, another interesting factoid. Imperium vote jumped mightily. According to Nosy's methodology, he's tracking a nearly 58% increase year over year. That is cray cray.
I think that is people are being whipped into line to following the ballot strictly, and are less willing to deviate to support characters who they may like from other areas of space. Or perhaps, well, it's the case that people, because previously the Imperium ballot also included leaders from other null blocks. So maybe their members didn't like voting for those other leaders and so deviated from the ballot for that reason. Or maybe this year, because of the war, because it's so bitter, everyone was more motivated to vote per the party line, so to speak.
I mean, perhaps, but if you think about how powerful Imperium's voting efforts are in general, to see that increase at all is interesting, to see it jump by such a big number. That's that's got to be scary for the other blocks. It's definitely putting them on notice. And, you know, if anyone out there is like, oh, another Nullsec CSM, Well, yeah, because there's who is voting. There is nothing stopping other areas of space from voting except their own inclination to vote. It is no harder. There's no technical reason. They're not, not getting the same notices that everybody else is getting. They are getting them. So they could vote if they wanted to. They're not. The CSM is not meant to reflect the population of the game. It's meant to reflect the voting population of the game.
I would push back on that purely to the extent that, while yes, in game, everything is equal. Out of game, the communication infrastructure that is set up for all of these null blocks makes it much, much easier for their leadership to communicate a ballot and to communicate the importance of voting and to remind their members to vote, to create incentives for voting. I think it is a whole lot more impactful, or a leader or a candidate finds it much easier to communicate with the NullSec player base than they do finding it to communicate with the HiSec player base, wormholes, LowSec, etc. Just because they're all consolidated and they all have a lot of communication infrastructure in place so that you can reach out to them all at once.
But you don't think other candidates were making the rounds on Twitter, blogs, podcasts? At the end of the day, it is a choice by the players in those areas of space not to engage with Eve at the same level, and that is reflected in their voting power ultimately. I mean, it's simple as a Twitter hashtag. If you were looking at TweetFleet or you were looking at hashtag Eve Online, even cursory in the weeks or months leading up to the election, you've heard about it. Right?
Enough.
Am I wrong?
I mean, I don't use Twitter, so I don't know.
I mean, just as an example of an out-of-game communication tool that's accessible regardless of who you play with in the game.
Yeah,
but you could use any number of podcasts or Twitch streams or et cetera, to cover the same idea. If you're not engaged with the game at that level or in that way, then sure, those aren't going to apply to you. But to the extent that you are interested in Eve and passionate about Eve and know things about Eve enough to, say, represent yourself accurately on the CSM if you were to run, or to vote for a candidate that did if you were to vote for them, yeah, you might have to, it might be a little bit of effort. Who is running? Is there an election? Those are pretty basic. It's not that CCP did anything to hide those. It's people aren't voting in those numbers. Now, I want to increase that number as much as possible, but I don't think it's a reason for people to complain or delegitimize the CSM, which is a refrain that you often hear from that crowd. Just dropping a glove based on some forum posts that I've seen.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, we have an interesting rule that Artemis and I were discussing prior to the show about term limits for the CSM. Artemis, do you want to break it down for the audience?
Yeah, so like I didn't know that they were a thing until I read Nosey's blog, and he just casually mentions that incumbents win, and this is the reason CCP instituted term limits. And so I'm like, hey, Alec, do you know about these term limits thing? He's like, no. That's weird. We did some Googling. There are all sorts of different posts about different term limits, but we found the dev blog from CSM14, where it was officially announced back in April 2020 as they were electing CSM15. So the way it works is anyone on CSM14 is included in the term limit. That term of CSM14 is included. And the term limit is 3 terms. As far as whether it's consecutive or not, it isn't explicit here. So that's an open question, and in my mind, as to where Suetonius stands in terms of the number of times he would be counted. But it seems to me like, at the very least, next CSM cycle, we are going to lose 4 of the current incumbent candidates, because Merkelchen, Innominates, Gobbins, and Villy have all been on the last 3 CSMs, CSM 14, 15, and 16. So they cannot run for CSM 17. They've reached the 3-term limit. And I'm trying to think, that means the other 3 incumbents, possibly including Suetonius, but I'm not sure, are going to be reaching their final term if they win again next year. So it'll be interesting to see. That's like half, or the 2 mainstays from Imperium, they're out. What? I'm not sure what happened with Aerith. Maybe they'll put him back in. the way that it's worded in the dev blog, it says specifically that, let me find the wording again. The rule will not be fully retroactive, but CSM 14 members will have 1 year counted. So I'm pretty sure that means that anything prior to CSM 14 is not included in the term limits.
Yeah, that's how I'd read it.
So we'll have to see where the Imperium goes with throwing their support in the ring. Definitely. I mean, how many other Imperium members are on the CSM? Are they just going to lose all of their existing, I'm not sure how to describe it, all of their existing like relationships with CCP? Will they be will the incumbents be able to effectively like pass those relationships on to the people who come in to replace them? With the Pappy side of things, Kenneth will have one more term. Progod could continue on. Dunk, I think, would be able to come back because he skipped some years. But it's definitely, this is going to be the first year, CSM 17. So next year will be the first year where term limits could possibly have an impact on which candidates can and cannot run.
I definitely think we must have covered this. Someone will probably link the show in the comments. We must have covered this when it first happened, but that was like 3 years ago. So I was like, oh yeah, term limits. I don't really remember anything about that. We had to go look it up. In general, I think they're great. I also think it's an interesting thing in CSM history that, you know, like in the older CSMs when I was running, we had almost no incumbents because no one wanted to do it 2 years in a row. It was so draining and exhausting and frustrating. And now we have to institute term limits because too many people want to do it too many times in a row. It's great that the CSM has evolved to the point where it doesn't make you want to quit EVE like it has for so many people that have run in CSMs prior. But yeah, I mean, it's clear with so many people getting reelected so often, incumbents do have a lot of power. Now that's also could be because they're doing a good job. I would say we don't often get enough signal to know whether or not that's true. Sometimes we get like, the CSM in general has done this thing or commented on this thing or given feedback about this thing. But because of the nature of the NDA and just how the whole CSM process works, outside of the minutes, I think it's pretty difficult to see what a CSM is actually doing if they're not hosting public events or putting out blogs or whatever. And even then, that's not necessarily representative of what they're doing behind the scenes. So overall, I think this is a positive development. If it's been anything like previous years, I think the incumbent handoff to new members will be pretty strong. As long as there's not like a CSM where it's totally new people and no one with an old hand there to help guide them, I think everything is going to be okay. The relationships will change and update. It is going to be on new people to forge their own relationships, but they won't have to do it cold. They'll get some guidance. They'll get some help. They'll have a period of crossover time where the outgoing CSM can kind of bring them up to speed on what's happening and who's involved and who are the important players.
That, and also I found an amusing comment. We'll talk a bit more about CCP Rise's participation in Pando's FC chat recently, but one of the comments relevant to here is he mentioned that even though Cetonia wasn't on the CSM last year, he still would reach out to Cetonia because the way the CSM NDA works is it's 5 years after the most recent time you receive NDA confidential information. So as long as he just like keeps reaching out to Cetonia with questions about upcoming balance changes, he can keep that rolling. It doesn't matter whether he's on the CSM or not. So yes, he misses out on the summits. And so yes, definitely all of these incumbents who are out the window will not be a major part in those summits, a major part in those weekly meetings and discussion forums. Definitely if they have particular value to CCP, CCP still does have the ability to reach out to them and utilize them as they see fit.
Can confirm. Well, speaking of CSM issues, boy, this one blew up real big, real fast. Pop-up gate. I don't know if that's the official term for it, but that's what I'm calling it. My God, I've never seen a interstitial for a video game cause so much furor, just raw anger. It's like a new summer of rage, practically.
I mean, that's what people were trying to make it. I don't think we got anywhere near that far. I think everybody was like, this makes me angry, this makes everybody angry, this is terrible and horrible and bad, but then weren't willing to actually do anything about it. Because at the end of the day, it didn't really have much of an impact on them. And so they would scream about it on Reddit, but that was about all that they were willing to do.
There are some people who are trying to claim that the PCU count going down is related to it. I don't really buy that compared to, say, the summer or COVID lockdowns ending.
I mean, I can guarantee that's not the case. Like, a week before this pop-up thing happened, there have been multiple meetings I've been a part of where people are talking like, hey, PCU is going down. Why do we think that's occurring? How do we respond to it? Like, specifically with TIS, they're discussing, what does this mean? Does this mean we're going to have more people watching, less people watching? How should we expect to adjust our content based on who is leaving? So it's definitely not the cause of everybody leaving. Maybe it's the cause of some extra people leaving. We'll have to find out. There's also Phantomite survey, which went out even before this thing happened, if memory serves. But to clue people in, Alec, can you describe what is the pop-up that everybody's angry about?
When you are a player joining EVE and you lose your ship for the first time, you are presented with a microtransaction offer. I think it's for $5, something along those lines, that gets you your ship back, or at least it's phrased to get you your ship back. Upon closer reading, I actually think it means you're buying a number of plexes and that you can use those plex for ISK to replace your ship. And this pops up in the in-game client on your first death.
Yeah. Me personally, if I saw that, I would just leave the game.
No, I'm interested in you here, and I'm interested in hearing about that, Artemis, because I've seen a lot of people say that. I don't necessarily know where that's coming from. Not that I disagree with it, but I want to hear more about that. What signals that say to you, and why does that mean you should stop playing?
That says to me that the players who have survived and become powerful in this game did so with their wallets. And if I'm new to this game, I have no other information on whether that's true or not, but I do have the company who created the game actively promoting that sort of culture and that sort of, it doesn't matter if you die as long as you have money IRL, because then you can get everything back. And so death is meaningless. It's all about how much money you can spend on this game. I think a similar thing happened before I played EVE. There was some sort of in-browser spaceship game. I've tried to find it for years since, but I can't. But like, you'd fly your spaceships around and you'd collect asteroids and sell them and buy a bigger spaceship to collect asteroids faster. It was dumb, but it was fun because it was a spaceship game and I didn't know what EVE was at the time. I played that for about a week or so until I lost my spaceship. And there wasn't a pop-up per se, but everybody in the group that I had sort of joined was like, yo, just pay some money and get your spaceship back. And I was like, nah, fam, this is not for me.
I see. Well, so you do make a really good point.
A me thing, but for me, if I'm looking to get into a video game and the culture of success in that video game is pump money into it, to remove your mistakes or errors or to succeed, I don't want to play that video game.
Yeah, that's an angle that I hadn't quite thought of. It's not necessarily what it's saying to the player about what they could do. It's about suggesting what other players may have done around them and the sour taste that might leave in their mouth. That makes sense to me.
What's your take?
I mean, it's not great. I was surprised at the visceral reaction. I didn't at first understand how it was that much different than all the other microtransactions CCP has been pushing on people. The fact that it was in-game and immersion breaking is certainly a bit of a bother, but you know, I think we are, as a player base, going to have to accept eventually some things like that, just so EVE can keep up with other modern games. Where microtransactions are like present within the client. That it was contextual, I actually thought was interesting, not necessarily because of the specific thing that they were offering, but just that CCP had the ability or had developed the ability to like present people with custom information based on the situation that they had found themselves in. And I presume, you know, they're using metrics and data to decide what to tell people when to maximize something. In this case, I guess their wallets. Ideally, it would be maximizing retention in some way. But, you know, that they can do that kind of thing is an interesting and useful ability. I wish they would put it toward more constructive uses than this one.
I do know that, oh, snap, who was it? I want to say it was Mike who mentioned in one of his recent YouTube videos about the re-election that everybody was angry about this, and the CSM has had a meeting with CCP's marketing team specifically, like, regarding this. I'm not sure if the meeting was planned ahead of time or the meeting occurred as a result of all the backlash regarding this, but this is definitely something where the CSM has brought it up with CCP. I suspect that it would be going away, but I think that all depends on the click-through rate on the ad.
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? What if this does in fact increase player attention? It's possible.
If it increases player attention, that makes me sad. That makes Eve a game that I don't want to play as much anymore. Again, maybe that's just like the kind of video game player that I am. Maybe it is. I am willfully ignorant of the role that somebody's wallet plays in their success at Eve. But I do not want to play a video game where the dominant strategy is use real life money to win.
I certainly do not either. And to your point, if you didn't know anything else about the game, that is certainly an impression you could be left with. I fully get that. At the end of the day, though, if the player count goes up as a result, I might decide to be fine with it. Because more people in the game out in space to shoot, especially if they're stuffing their ship with real money and don't know how to use all of it, at the end of the day, that's good kills for us.
Yeah, perhaps I'm following into a bit of a slippery slope thing where I'm like, well, if this is successful, what does CCP pull next? How do they tweak the incentives for using Plex, buying Plex, selling for real life money? If we trust that CCP will handle themselves in the balance of this game well to not try and milk more money, then I think your perspective is a good one. If you are disillusioned and don't trust CCP, like I think a lot of the players who are spurging about this already are, then I don't think this pop-up staying or more players joining will change their opinion one bit.
Well, I mean, a key thing is, like, you can already do this, right? You can already buy Plex and sell that Plex for ISK and use that ISK to replace your ship or buy a bigger, shinier ship or even buy skill points to get into a new ship. This has long been a part of the game. Letting someone know that they can do that is itself, I don't think, a bad thing. Because that's how CCP makes money. It's not adding new functionality to the game or fundamentally changing the way something in the game works. I do think the timing of it as their first impression, to your point earlier, I actually 100% agree with you. It gives a weird impression of Eve. And I could see it turning people off. But if conversely, it does in fact encourage them to stay, you know, whether they buy or not, it either doesn't affect them leaving or they in fact leave less and stay and play longer. I wouldn't predict that to be the case, but if CCP wanted to test it, and that test wound up working, and it was a way to increase the player count, I don't think it's really that bad. I just think it'd be counterintuitive to what the ad is, but I know enough about software and product design to know that, you know, sometimes things don't have quite the impact you think they will, or there's going to be a different player psychology in there. I hope that they're testing it. If they're not, then I think the player feedback should be taken as valid. If they are testing it, or had tested it, then I think there is some value in that too. Players aren't always right, especially when the hard data is telling you something else. We're just sort of pasting our assumptions on new players that are joining the game. And those assumptions could be true or not true. I think they're true. Then I understand that I could be wrong. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And you made some good points in that monologue that I totally did not pay attention to because I was way too distracted thinking about all the uses for a soundboard with that noise that you made.
That one?
Yeah. Like, that sort of indecisive, I'm not sure how to word this, but I feel strongly about it. Freaking high pitch going down in. I feel like that's got some mileage on it.
I'd love to see an Alex soundboard someday. Somebody make that happen. Just like take all of declarations of war and make a soundboard out of me. It'd be great. Well, no amount of ISK can replace the next thing we're about to talk about, which is Pochvin's final Asbel is dead. There are no more Asbels in the entire region of Pochvin, which, if you're not familiar with it, has player anchorable structures in it from when those systems got flipped to the Triglavian Collective. However, new player structures may not be planted and deployed. So, once it dies, it's effectively gone. It's not like you can just throw another one down. And if all of them die, then the capability of using them is just gone. You're stuck using, I guess, if there are any Raitaras left or just NPC stations. And that's it. Now, the reasoning behind all of this is a change that CCP made to facilitate players getting into and out of Pochvin by reducing the amount of standings needed to get access to the gates. This made entry into Pochvin by non-Triglavian players considerably easier, and so you saw Nullsec groups going in there basically to pick fights. And the Triglavian collectives put up a good resistance, but at the end of the day, just couldn't keep up with the numbers.
Yeah, I heard a take on this that I absolutely hate, and I forget where I heard it. It was either TIS or it was on Pando's FC chat. But the take was that Pochvin players are complaining, and in fact, they've destroyed some of their own structures so that they're not beholden to these timer fights over and over again. And they're generally just not happy with the change to the gates because they're getting lambasted with all the Nullsec players, etc. And the take was that this is Pochvin's players' fault. They shouldn't be complaining that there are more people coming to their space, but rather they shouldn't have made it so fun to come in and fight them. The argument was that people wouldn't care about Pochvin if the Pochvin residents weren't creating fun fights by taking out brawling battleship fleets to defend their structures. And then the Pochvin players weren't strong enough organizations to defend against all of these Nullsec blobs coming in. Therefore, the Nullsec or the Pochvin groups should not have been using those fun doctrines to defend, because the inevitable result was for them to be overwhelmed by other groups looking for fun fights. And I am definitely like mischaracterizing this take in a less eloquent way than it was originally communicated, partly out of memory, partly because I hate it so much and I can't help myself. But this is so freaking dumb. It's like, if you are a non-massive group, you are not allowed to take out a fun fleet or own stuff because you're incentivizing other people to come and kill you. And you don't deserve to live. Like, there should not be mechanics in place to allow you to exist at a smaller scale. Therefore, it's your fault for flying in a fun way. That is the dumbest take I have ever heard. And
it's ultra dumb when you it's ultra dumb when you realize they actually defended quite a bit using their fun doctrine. So it's not like they were just feeding constantly.
Yeah, and that was the whole thing of the take, is like, they shouldn't have defended using this. The reason it was defending the way that Nullsec players, maybe it was Vili who had this take, now that I think about it, because I definitely know Vili was talking about the blue balls, or I forget the way that's phrased, Helldunker blue balls, maybe. The way that Nullsec typically runs their fights, where either it's a guaranteed win, or they don't fight you at all, and it's a bunch of timers and blue balls and stuff. And the argument is that, like, that is necessary to survive in Nullsec, because otherwise you're going to get, you're just going to lose. People are going to come in and keep fighting and keep fighting and keep fighting, and you aren't going to have the stamina to continue to defend your space, and so you're going to lose your space. And so that's the reason that Nullsec has to blob small gangers and blob solo players. It's so that it's not appetizing for them to come back to that space anymore. And so it is 100% placing blame on the Pochvin players for bringing defensive fleets, specifically fun to fight against defensive fleets, for their loss, by saying you incentivized players to continue to fight you because you made it fun by fighting back.
But the alternative is they lose their stuff anyway if they don't fight back, which is why that argument holds no water.
Yeah, yeah, no, I want to defend the take because I think it is my place to defend the take because I sort of put this up as a pseudo straw man, even though legit somebody else made this and I'll have to find a source that it, people don't call me crazy.
I believe you because that tracks for most Nullsec fights. And part of it makes sense. Certainly on the roaming gag front, yeah, like blobbing people out and being super effective at trapping and killing roamers is extremely effective at getting people not to come back to your space. That is a tried and true thing. On the other hand, though, refusing to defend any of your things is a great way to lose all of your space because you just get rolled over. Eventually, you have to fight. Looking for that one great hell dunk opportunity is good when you're like in this coalition versus coalition, multi-region, multiple alliance spanning conflict where the loser is the person who decides that the game isn't fun anymore and stops playing. But for everyone else playing Eve, you know, a lot of our stuff, it matters. And for Pochven, it super matters because if it dies, it's not like they can just throw up another one.
Yeah, I need to find the source of this take so that players can hear it as it was eloquently communicated in the first place and make their own decisions on it. It just made me very angry and I wanted to bring it up. Look for a link in the show notes if I'm able to find it. Other takes regarding this were that Pochven players, some of them think that removing the standings requirement made it so that too many people could flood in. It made it possible for all the Nullsec entities to come in. The comment was then made that like the barrier for entry for Nullsec, it was mostly a condemnation of the Nullsec player base, saying you guys couldn't be bothered to grind standings so that you could enter this space. And like there was definitely fun to be had. All these fleets, all these timers, they existed before. They didn't suddenly pop up when the standings changes removed. You just couldn't be bothered to put in the effort up front to access it. Which is definitely true, and it definitely raises some questions. I support CCP's change to better enable and to remove barriers to accessing this space, but I think it is definitely a valid condemnation of the Nullsec player base that they couldn't be bothered to put in any sort of effort up front in order to access this space. They just wanted to be able to respond to a ping, grab their ship off contract, and let their FC tell them when to press F1.
Yeah, which is, I guess, as legit as anything else, but don't throw shade. No, your players are having too much fun. Stop it.
Man. Pochven is a mess. One thing we kind of glossed over in all of my angry ramblings was that Triglavian groups are, like, legit just burning down their own structures because they hate the way that their gameplay has turned into defending timers over and over and over again until eventually, like, the people who show up with too many bat phones, and so they lose. Cool. I like that. I think it makes a good point.
I don't know about that. It definitely makes a point. I think it might be good culturally and probably the best thing they could do morale-wise if it really looked like they were going to lose all their stuff. But on the other hand, it is a big waste of money and a waste of other potential fun fights they could have.
See, I like it because I think the only other alternative is you continue to give fights to people who I don't think deserve to participate in those fights because of the aforementioned refusing to participate in them by doing any sort of work up front. They just want to pick their ships and they ignored these fights until it was zero input required from them. So that's the reason that I don't think the fights are fun for the future. Plus, it's also not fun for the defenders. They're beholden to these fights. This isn't the gameplay that they were looking for. And the only other alternative is you sell the structures to another group. And I don't think it would be good for Pochven for some large Nullsec entity to suddenly control all these structures. I think that would just be terrible. So I'm glad that they're gone.
Yeah, fair enough. I would have loved to have seen the Trig players like continue to farm Nullsec people as much as possible. I know there are enough folks out there who would love to get a shot at Nullsec players at a big battleship brawl. They probably could have garnered some support from outside entities to make those fights a little more competitive. But it's a nitpick. It's their money.
Alec, listen to yourself. You're saying, guys, bat phone harder.
That is the way of the game, is it not? They're bat phoning on you.
100% the way of the game, and I'm not happy that that is the way of the game.
I don't know why you would be unhappy about them. It's an open world game that's just the way it is. Somebody brings 10 people and they were going to fight you 5v5. They bring double those numbers. You go, all right, you just cheated. Let me call up my friends. I do think the social aspect of the game is just a viable path of gameplay as anything else. Diplomacy, deal making, public relations, that's all part of EVE as well.
Definitely, I agree it has a place in EVE. I think that place is in NullSec, and there should be mechanics in place to allow other play styles to succeed in other areas of EVE. And I think PodgeFan had the potential to be another one of those places, and that potential is now gone.
Yeah, that's a shame. But more things may happen to PodgeFan. Hopefully, TCP will signal they're not done with development there. I know they need to fix some issues with their PvE content about it being super frustrating to do because people that aren't involved in it can take part of the ISK. It used to be an issue for some other kinds of EVE content that eventually got fixed. Hopefully they'll have a similar experience, but on a faster timetable. And then maybe we'll get some new stuff in Posh as well. It would be nice. Like, I love the idea of it. I don't think it makes sense necessarily for Noir to, you know, do the standings trade to get in there, but maybe at some point we'll get a contract that's lucrative enough for us to make that jump. But you know, it's a cool concept. It's like a super hardcore, hard to play EVE region, and I think the game does need something like that. Well, there are some new aspects to EVE gameplay, some rather interesting ones. New gates. Connecting K-space regions in new ways, including the much, much asked for Staingate. This happened a while back. We never really got a chance to talk about it. The Jita to Amar route has now been sort of returned. There's now a 0.4 LOSEC system in between it, effectively making the system of Abazon the new Rancer. But, you know, if you don't want to go 33 jumps in high sec, that is the thing to do. I don't know how I feel about this. I kind of liked the idea that the Triglavian thing and Pochven event had some lasting consequences by severing the Jita and Amar route. I guess that couldn't last forever, but I was hoping it would last more than a year. Do you have any thoughts on that, Artemis?
I think you communicated my thoughts exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you kill off Superman, you bring him back a couple issues later. We gotta give these things a bit of lasting stakes. You know, I like the idea, but I feel like it was rushed.
I am glad that they brought back a low-sec route as opposed to a high-sec one. Honestly, if CCP, when PodgeFam was introduced, if the route that was taken away left a 12 jump long low sec route, I would have been cool, that's fine, and wouldn't have cared one bit. So the fact that this 12 jump low sec route exists again, I don't think is in and of itself a problem. Yeah, you know what, I'm walking back my position on this one. I think it's fine, because I think if the original Pochvin changes had left in place a 12 jump low sec route to Jita between Jita and Amar, and I'm like, cool, this creates some content for LoSec. It allows players to make a risk versus reward decision after they spend the time to take the longer high-sec route or go through LoSec. I would have been fine with it if it existed in the first place. I think the only problem with this is the perception that the consequences for PodgeFan and whatnot are being reduced, and I'm meh on that one.
We've also got the Staingate, like I said. It now connects pretty close to Amar. It's gone from one of the most difficult regions to get to arguably one of the easiest NPC NullSec regions to get to. 9 jumps. That's it's definitely a switch. Will be interesting to see what the effects are.
I spoke to Billy on TIS 2 weeks ago about this. from like a big Knobloch perspective, it's not particularly impactful. They use jump freighters anyway. From a small ganger, access to those sorts of southern regions for roaming definitely makes it easier if they weren't using filaments and were just using gate jumps. I think the bigger impact will be on exploration folks, those who use exploration freaks to get around. If they wanted to go and explore in Stain, much easier for them. There's also the mythical Stain wagon and all those groups who like got kicked out of Catch and the other nearby Sov regions and supposedly retreated to Stain to spend the winter and then will rise again and take back their space. It'll be interesting to see how that impacts them if they do in fact exist in the way that they are described.
Also connecting previously isolated reasons, Solitude now has a new gate into it from Placid. I don't know. In fact, I think I might like this one less than the Stain gate. Like, the whole point of Solitude is it's supposed to be isolated, thus the name. Having it be a pretty convenient connection, that's, I don't know. I guess it sucks for the Solitude players. It takes away what I thought was a pretty unique region concept. It's just kind of a shame to see it go. Not that, you know, a lot of people were using it for that, but it kind of had its own ecosystem and political infrastructure down there, and that's going to be a lot harder to maintain.
If this change happened a few years ago, before filaments were so easy to use to get back to other areas of HiSec, I would agree. But with filaments being what they are, with wormholes being what they are, I don't think this will meaningfully change access to Solitude, other than for players who may not have had the knowledge of the game to use those other travel methods. And I'm happy to let those players experience a more isolated area of space.
And finally, Igris to Pakshi. Gate hardly anyone's going to care about. it cuts out a 20-jump route between Genesis and Metropolis for the players that live in there, which is not terribly many people.
Concord space. What is Concord space?
Concord has some systems.
I know they have like ULI and whatever. I just didn't realize it was meaningful. I would have included it into whatever the other region would be. I don't know. It's a lore thing. I think that gate was also the one that had the least amount of ore mined for it. No, it had more ore mined than the Solitude one. Interesting. And the Amar to Stain. Yo, the Stain gate had the least support of all the gates.
That is pretty weird.
That's unexpected. With all the hype around finally a gate to Stain, Stain gate had the least amount.
Some of that may have been where you had to be to get to like participate in that particular part of it.
Well, yeah, but this freaking gate between Genesis and Metropolis had the second highest amount of ore mined. Like, I can understand the Jita route getting a lot of ore mined. Like, that is definitely something that is useful for the kind of players who would be mining ore and want to travel through HiSec with it. This one between Metropolis and Genesis?
Maybe it's a faction warfare thing.
I'd have to look at, like, the MER and see if maybe there's a bunch of miners who just live in Metropolis and Genesis, or is this some sort of RP thing that we're out of the loop on? Why is there so much more ore mined for this?
I could not even begin to speculate. If you're out there and you know, please share. I'd be super interested to learn more about the mining habits of Genesis residents, just in general. Well, we've also got some... Oh, speaking of the MER, do you just want to transition to that now? We can leave the last dev blog for last.
Yeah, can do. Not much to talk about here. The one thing that I really wanted to bring up is that Vale of the Silent is now, like, king of the crabbing regions, which recently being taken over... Well, not that recently, but recently enough was taken over by Fraternity and Winter Coalition and is now... In my mind, like the narrative is that previously Winter Coalition and Fraternity lived in drone regions. That was the MER king. They have since moved further over to like central and west north of the map. And so now with them, so goes MER crownship of regions. Poorly worded. I think you get my point. Nothing else is even close. Like, the second highest Kavala Expanse horde space is half of what the Veil of the Silent is in terms of NPC bounties. So it is definitely, if you're looking for a place to go hunt, head to Veil of the Silent. Fraternity are cool as far as the way that they fight back, and also that's where the vast majority of activity is.
And I took that personally. we've been hired against fraternity-controlled regions, been on that contract for some time now, and goddamn, it is frustrating to see how much they're still doing in Veil, despite our pretty frequent roaming of it.
Yeah, it's also got the highest mining value, beating out the Forge by a significant margin as well. So it is the place to go if you want to hunt.
Well, it is and it isn't. For all their botting, which they definitely do, Fraternity is also extremely effective at defending their space. Touching back to what we said earlier, their defensive fleets are fast, well-organized, and oppressive. They don't give a fuck about a fair fight. They want to lock you down and smother you with as many ships on as many gates as possible so that you either cannot leave, or if you try to leave, you face a fight that you can't win, or if you're going to get out with some ships, you're going to take some expensive losses. And it can be very demoralizing to face that constantly. If we weren't being paid to do it, we probably wouldn't. But we are, so we are. But I guarantee you that, like, less determined PvPers out there would not choose to go there for, like, you're not getting good fights because they're not going to give you any. You're not going to kill that much. You might kill some Vexers if you can catch them, but again, a lot of them are botted. If you catch anything worth a significant amount of value, there's a fair chance that it's either going to get saved or you're going to lose your entire fleet on the way out. It doesn't always happen, but it happens frequently enough. You know, a lot of folks out there, it's not worth billions to keep throwing at Fraternity for no discernible gain.
See, and that is what I think I like the most about this, is because for all that other null blocks will rave about Helldunk or blue balls, and for the most part, they will rely on the blue balls, sort of that, where they tell their members to dock up and not fight. I think Fraternity creates a great counter argument saying that, no, the best option is just to fight and fight really freaking hard. And if you win so frequently, people will just stop coming to your space. I really like the Fraternity for all of their faults, and Winter Coalition at L. I don't really know who specifically lives in Veil anymore. They are really showing that there is another option to docking up and telling your members to stop playing the game for an hour until the baddies leave.
Perhaps that option will be embraced by Nullsec players in the future. I don't know. I feel like the Fraternity campaign has challenged us in some interesting ways. I mean, they definitely don't let you get away with a lot of mistakes. We've had to think creatively about how we're getting kills. We've had to think creatively about what we're bringing into their space and how much money we're putting onto those ships to make sure that it's efficient. It's been frustrating, but strengthening in a way. I feel like it's forced us to up our game in some ways.
Yeah, and that's also another reason why I like it so much, because it is valuable to both sides. Like, it is going to be frustrating to the Fraternity side because they're like, I want to mine and rat and make money, and these people keep coming in and trying to kill me, and so I have to reship and stop making money to go kill them. It's frustrating to the attacker side because they're like, I want to go in and get kills, and instead I'm getting blobbed. But both sides benefit because the blobbers get to go back to their crabbing, and the PvPers get a fight, potentially, and also improve their PvP skill by being presented with greater problems to solve, greater challenges to solve. There is no way for you as a PvPer to counterplay somebody docking up. Straight up, either you catch them before they dock up, which has been the meta for who knows how long with AFK clamping, or you go farm somewhere else, or try again tomorrow. And I like that, yes, it is frustrating, but it is frustrating in a way that promotes you to change your gameplay and log back in to try it a different way tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it would feel that way if it wasn't for the botting component. There is no upside to hopping into local and then having everything gone by the time you finish your D scans and not even seeing them in the sights, that is just depressing, especially when it happens over and 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 over again. I know CCP is doing their best, but goddamn, like, if anything were to make me stop playing, it would be the prevalence of botting in Eve and just how destructive that is to the PvP gameplay experience, because it's not just that they're escaping, it's that you still have to spend the time to hunt them because you don't know if they're bots or not. If they just didn't exist, you could move on to systems with actual players you could play against. It would make the whole roaming process much more streamlined. And yeah, you might not see ships in space as often, but the ships you did see in space, you had an actual chance of catching. And when you do catch them, then that interaction happens. They're fighting you. Something comes to save them. Maybe they kill you. Maybe the guy that comes to save them kills you. As it is, that just doesn't happen. Or happens so infrequently, it's nerve-wracking.
I think you articulated that point really well, and I do not have any way to improve it.
CCP is trying, though. They have recently rebalanced Blops battleships, which is awesome. I really like the direction of them.
You had a fantastic transition there, and I want to break it just to talk about another thing that made me angry. I'm sorry.
God damn it. Good.
I recently saw one of the top posts on r/Eve. Was some NullSec player complaining about the death or the significant reduction in value of AFK ratting. And they're like, the only reason I play Eve is because I can do this sort of low input PvE that allows me to progress in the game while also watching Netflix, doing work, what have you. And it really made me angry because I'm like, that gameplay still exists. It's called mining. Why are you sitting here whinging on Reddit, and why is this post getting so much freaking support when there's a very clear alternative to continue to support this gameplay just in a way that doesn't kill Eve's economy, and it's called mining? That's all I have to say. Like, it is great for Eve's economy that AFK ratting has been significantly reduced. I think we'll talk a bit later about the way CCP is going about that rebalance from a content perspective and the hunter's perspective. And just go mine. If you want that AFK low input, that is still available to you. Stop being an idiot.
Yeah, don't disagree there. On the hunting changes, though, I mean, we're about to talk about them, and I do want to say at the outset, I think the direction these changes are going in is pretty awesome. But if you want to talk about actually improving hunting gameplay, I think we're at the point where simple ship tweaks are not it. It's the bot problem. You need to rebalance some core things about how Eve works so that hunters have a chance to at least get the lay of the land before things in the system warp away. Or you got to get more rigorous on enforcement, detection and enforcement. And if you can't get more rigorous on detection and enforcement, then I strongly suggest you consider the former option. I know Blackout left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, but at least they tried something. And we need them to try something else.
I didn't anticipate us going into a botting discussion during this podcast, but now that you bring it up again, when was the last time we had one of those security reports from CCP about like how many bots were banned and all that jazz?
It has been a while, at least a couple months.
I'm trying to remember, were those quarterly? Were they monthly?
Oh, they weren't monthly, for sure.
Scroll through Eve News and find when the ones that we had were. Because there's an extent to which I want to agree with you that they need to increase their enforcement on this. There's also the extent to which part of a botter's gameplay is making it so that you can't tell that they're bots. And like me previously being a prolific AFK ratter, it's just the intel that you have available, even if you're just a normal human being watching Netflix or doing your work in college, like you look exactly like a bot. You dock up when you see an intel ping or when you see someone join local, and there is no way for you, the hunter, to know whether I'm just a player who knows how to play the game optimally given the incentives in place or a bot. So there's an extent to which I want to give players the benefit of the doubt and say they're not bots, but it is a difficult challenge to solve. And so I'm sort of looking to CCP to increase their communication on how effective they're being at solving that challenge in order to support you and your mental health as you continue to play this game.
I don't think it comes down to my experience. Some of it could be, like you said, players that are just playing optimally given the game structure and incentives. I'm sure that's true for several occasions, but when I'm roaming around, I feel very strongly that I'm seeing bots every gameplay session, at least a couple times, particularly concentrated in frat space at the moment, because that's where we are, so that's what I can only speak on. But if you look at the MER, for instance, and this is why this is coming up, that is an inhuman amount of ISK to generate. And it just so happens to follow whatever region Fraternity owns and is using as their primary income generator. That's not a coincidence. If they can't improve detection and they're enforcing already what they can detect, then there needs to be stiffer consequences to alliances that tolerate and house these bots. Or there needs to be gameplay changes that make bots less strong compared to human players. The status quo I can't emphasize it much, like how brutal it is to play the game under these conditions. I'm still doing it, obviously, still here, but you know, it really does sap a lot of the fun out of what would otherwise be, you know, Eve has its flaws, it can feel old sometimes. A lot of nullsec can seem empty, but if it's an empty nullsec system, at least I know I can spend my time somewhere else. And if I jump into a system with 8 people in it, and all of them are gone immediately, it's like, okay, well, I have to de-scan all the different pockets to see if any of them do happen to be out there, just in case one of them's a player. Every once in a while, you will find one, but man, it is a very inefficient process. And you can go several days worth of gameplay session without finding anything to fight. And that is a very poor gameplay experience for PvPers in general.
Okay, so I know we were going to go into this dev blog here, but I think that's a great... The points that you all made, I think, are points that CCP Rise covered in depth in a way that I would like to rephrase here.
Transition, my friend. Go for it.
So he was recently on Pando's FC chat and had a fantastic discussion with Pando about upcoming changes, specifically, like, this was a few weeks ago. So he was talking about the potential for there to be a drug that would increase your cloak and vulnerability duration. We've since, like, seen that come to fruition on CC and such. Also talking about, like, the conduit jumps and other things that have come out that we'll talk about a bit later in this podcast. But one of the things that he talked about that really piqued my interest was the way that he and his team are looking at how they balance hunter versus prey. And specifically, the ideal that they're looking for is, with the removal of cloaky camping, a lot of hunters are like, hey, you know, the cloaking and all these tools are ways that we could use to catch the prey. And so you're making it less likely for us to be able to catch prey. Therefore, our time is less rewarding because we're getting fewer and fewer successful attempts. And his counter to that is they're looking at this in terms of the full equation, not just one side or the other. So they're looking at the hunters want to have a high probability of catching prey, but the reason for that is because there's so little prey out there. Basically, their perspective is that AFK cloaky camping, other tools available to players, were so oppressive that fewer and fewer players were out in space. Also, there was less carrots, so they had less reason to be out in space. And so for that reason, you had to be really good at catching people, because if you missed a target, there's no guarantee there's another one next system over. And so from he and his team's perspective, if they can increase the number of players out doing stuff to make ISK, the number of available targets, then it is fine to also reduce the ability of the hunters to attack those players, because it will even out. You'll still get as much reward by hunting, because sure, you'll miss a few more, but there will be even more the next system over that you have the chance to catch. And also potentially he could incentivize them to undock greater value ships that you could catch. The option of, like, capital or super capital focused PvE options so that people are required to commit larger assets. They have reward relative to the value of those assets, but also they're in space and vulnerable to attack. Another thing they brought up was adding more points to the Nullsec anomalies or whatever PvE they're engaging in to make sure that they're actually committed to that and it's not as easy for them to run away. Previously, like before listening to this and the way that it was described, and I highly recommend anybody go and listen to the way that he described it, I would have been of the opinion that AFK cloaking wasn't the problem. The problem is Intel, that we have to utilize AFK cloaking as a tool because Intel is so oppressive. I think that that argument was well countered by this alternative that if there were just more players out there, more opportunities for those players to make mistakes, the option for CCP to make it so that it's harder for those players to run away in the future by making them have to commit higher value assets or actually commit those assets in a more meaningful way. It maybe it's just I was looking for a glimmer of hope with in terms of Eve, that I was willing to drink the Kool-Aid as it was given to me, but I was happy with the way that it was described. Trying to do my best to describe it back to you, dear listener, I would highly recommend you just go and listen to it.
It makes sense if you don't factor in time. Like, to check 10 systems takes a certain amount of time. If the system is empty, you just warp right through it. If the system is not empty, you have to consider that some of those people might be targets, and you have to look for them as a hunter. So, if targets are more spread out, that means more systems to check. But if they're all still equally as likely not to be there after you're done, why do any of it?
I think the I think where we're disconnecting here is it's not that targets are more spread out. It's that there are just more targets. Fewer empty systems. Like there are more people in any given system or more systems have people in them. It's not that people are more spread out, so you have to spend more time to find the same number of potential targets. It is that there are more potential targets out there.
Well, we'll see if it bears out, but I think they've tried that with... I think the only time they've tried that and it's worked has been Rorquals, and that is because the Rorqual has a mechanic that keeps it in place for a certain amount of time. So when you find one, you have a chance that it's in a position where it can be tackled. Not really aware off the top of my head of any CCP change along these lines that's actually had that intended effect. But I am willing to give Ryze and Talos, generally speaking, the benefit of the doubt in that their balance patches are, on the whole, pretty good, even if I don't agree with the direction of some of them, and that if this isn't working out in some sort of detrimental way, that there is a better than even chance with these guys at the helm that they will do something to fix it. Now, if it's next year and still no, you know, it's like, well, it just gets harder and harder for players to stay. And the more players that leave, the less of that social bond there is to keep players in there. And if there's a, I mean, I guarantee if there's no hunters anywhere, you'll probably have a lot of people in space, but they'll be making ISK to do what exactly? Eventually that too will get boring. You need to keep the ecosystem healthy on both ends.
Certainly so. So let's talk about those changes that we're happy with, or maybe not so happy with.
I think I'm fairly happy with them. The Enter the Portal update, the main thing is scanning frigates are getting some slight rebalances. I think exploration folks will find a lot to love there. But the big change is that Blops battleships are getting a rebalance. Each of them is essentially getting a second new bonus, with a lot of their previous bonus just rolled into the hull, particularly like speed while cloaking and things like that. The Panther is getting its per level speed boost rolled into its base stats, and it's getting a weapon bonus instead. Sin is getting a logistic drone bonus, which seems a little strange to me. My favorite of the changes, the Redeemer getting a neutralizer bonus, and then the Widow getting a tank bonus, which I know has some people in Noir quite excited. Of the bunch, I think the Deemer and the Panther certainly come out ahead as like the premier armor brawlers. The Redeemer was already the premier armor brawling Black Ops battleship, and I think now with its neutralizer bonus, its strength bonus, it just looks that much better. It sort of has the Balgorn's strength bonus instead of the Geddon's range bonus. I think it works better in the context of a Black Ops battleship because you're almost certainly dropping in range of your target. So I like that. I think it's useful. I think it's cool. I think it spruces up the Demer in a unique way, but still keeps all the parts of it that were good before. And with the Panther, I can see it filling sort of a Tempesty type role, like the primary damage dealer of that battleship fleet. But versatile with a number of mids.
Yeah, I think I agree on all counts, although I will freely admit that my... like, I have done the whole Redeemer solo blob battleship thing. Not prolific with it, but I've done it before. If memory serves, the fitting is really, really, really hard. That's my biggest thing about whether this neutralizer bonus will be impactful is, in terms of hunting, is do you just have the slots and the fitting to make use of it? Certainly from a defensive standpoint, I know, like, the heavy newt on the Demer for the most part was helpful to you because you could use it to escape from tackle if you got long pointed by a scepter. With the fittings that were most frequently used or the targets that you were most frequently going after, a single heavy newt would either take too long to break the tank, and so reinforcements would arrive and you'd lose the kill, or would be insufficient to break the tank, or not required whatsoever. So it's like, it's cool. I'm just not sure it will be super impactful.
I did get some slight fitting buffs, so I don't know if they're 100% going to compensate for what you're talking about specifically, but it was in there. As far as use cases, I mean, the obvious ones that come up are dropping on Rourke walls and countering faxes when they come in, both of which will benefit extremely, extremely much from that neutralizer strength bonus. Breaking the tanks in those things is hard, and unless you're planning on dropping like 30 Redeemers, each with one newt, yeah, that's quite a bit. So I think this brings capital ship killing into the realm of most groups, like most medium-sized groups, Black Ops capabilities, which is exciting.
I guess the thing that I was considering is specifically like a solo play style where your Demer is doing both the neuting and the damage. I was not properly considering the alternative option that you're in a fleet of Blobs battleships, and so you have the role of the Newt Demer and the role of the Damage Panther, etc., etc. From that perspective, this is a very meaningful change.
I think it could do some interesting things with it solo, perhaps. But yeah, I was primarily thinking in a fleet context. If you wanted a solo drop, certainly having a newt is great. If your DPS is low, basically make sure that you can break the tank of a battleship that you're dropping on. But you probably could do that with a regular newt and wouldn't necessarily need the bonus.
I think the other big change from this coming through was the conduit jump, which Ryze clarified in his interview on FC Chat that like they had initially slated for this to be the removal of the standard jump portal mechanic, and so that you could only do a conduit jump. And that is like the long-term vision, is that both for covert and for regular jump portals and bridges, the bridge is no longer a thing. It's a conduit. And your ship goes too, which I think is really cool. I'm happy with that. I think the way that it is compromised now goes a long way to CCB Rise's point of trying not to make people even more angry, because Blops and that sort of covert gameplay has been hit really freaking hard with recent changes. So I'm glad that they opted not to just remove the ability to bridge in with this change, and that they have a sort of hybrid system for the time being.
I do hope it's just for the time being, though, because I think having to put your Black Ops or Titan on the line to go in, it can be argued that you just have people not Titan bridging anymore, in which case...
I'm happy.
Okay.
I like that, yeah.
Let's have more fights on gates. That's fine with me. But I like it because it's good risk and reward, and it puts a little fun back in the arms of the Black Ops player. Like, it's now not a thing you could just assign to an alt, or whoever has to volunteer for it doesn't get on the kills. Now, of course, they have the option with this conduit jump as well, but I like that it puts a little more skin in the game, even if it is inherently riskier. I think you could see some evolution in Black Ops fitting and tactics to make it more viable. And certainly for the Titan use case, you know, more Titans can be at risk and we have more Titan fights. Or conversely, they won't use bridges at all. And if they want to get from place to place, they'll have to go via gates, which will mean fighting. Or potentially they'll stop fighting at all because they can't Titan bridge. But I have a hard time seeing even the most pampered NullSec player going that route. At least not for very long.
Another detail I wanted to bring up with this one is that with the conduit jump, it's sort of like a one-time deal. It's not where the bridger is staying there on grid for a little bit. And so you have time if you're an idiot who was out of range of the bridge or you double-clicked in space or whatever. There's no fixing that. So I did like that they thought about this situation and made it so there's now a 10-kilometer range where you can do the conduit jump instead of like the 2.5 or 5 or whatever it is right now for current like jump bridging. So that I think that is a valuable change and something to bear in mind, that it's a bit more leeway given the all or nothing mechanic that's in place with conduit jumping.
But crucially, I think one reason why it's not that great, or not that it's not a great change, it's just that it's not a super interesting change, is that there's really nothing stopping you from just doing the normal covert bridge, and then after everybody goes through, jumping your Black Ops. If you wanted to do it that way, you could with current mechanics. The filament jump, the conduit jump, sorry, it's not really adding anything new as long as it's an option instead of just what can happen, because the Black Ops can always go to the covert sign, I think. It always has that option. It'll load within 10 seconds of everybody else.
Yeah, but CCP did add a bit of a carrot to using this new feature, though, by making it significantly cheaper to conduit jump. The isotope cost per light year was significantly reduced if you're doing a conduit jump versus if you're doing a regular bridge. So there is definitely some strong incentive depending on how long you're planning on staying out.
Is it a billion per jump? Because that's how much the Black Ops costs.
I mean, fair point. Like, then again, you also get to choose your target. So you can decide, you know, is this a target where I'm willing to risk my blobs? I'm happy that the carrot exists there, that it is cheaper to use it. I think the lever that they've put in place where they're limiting to only 30 players can go through a conduit at once, considering that this is going to eventually be the only method of travel, I like that there is a cap on it. You cannot no longer have one Titan bridging four different full subcap fleets, I think is a good thing.
I think realistically that's a cap they're going to have to lift when they make it the only thing, but I'm fine with it. If that's what it takes to get to that model.
No, I don't want them to lift this cap. I think 30 is a good sweet spot. 30, let's say 25 bombers and 5 recons, maybe 25 bombers, 4 recons, 1 fuel truck. I think that is a decent, like that is a fully capable blobs fleet. If you are jumping onto a target that can withstand that, like I'm thinking most caps can't withstand that, Rorqual notwithstanding, you're not taking a super down with that. But if you're hunting a super, you're probably going to need to invest more blobs battleships to attack it, which I think is good. It requires some investment from the attacker side. It requires some investment from the prey side. I think that's some good balance there. I really like 30 as a sweet spot. I agree that 10 was way too small. You could not have an effective blobs fleet with 10. I'm also like looking at the way that the Imperium right now is utilizing just hundreds, like 200 bombers in a single fleet to just go around nuking things in Delve, which number one is hilarious. They should have done this sooner because it's great. But then also number two, like I think that is going to become oppressive. And so I like having this mechanic to limit it and make sure that they, if they want to continue to use that many bombers, they have to put more skin in the game in terms of blob battleships.
I would rather design it such that they're putting at least their blobs, a blobs battleship and at least a Titan on field to do it. And I mean, I can just from a player feedback and a quality of life perspective, there's no way CCB is going to require NullSec fleets of thousands to jump 30 at a time with a Titan for each group of 30 players. That would be ridiculous.
I imagine it's going to be a different number for Titans. Like, I would think a Titan would be 256. Like, you can jump one fleet per Titan. I think that would be fair in my mind. I'm willing to like negotiate on that number. I don't think 30 is where they land for regular bridging. I'm happy with 30 from Lops.
All right. Agree to disagree for now. Be interesting to see if this hybrid model maintains for a long period of time, like, you know, passes and citadels, or if it is in fact something that they make the switch on and pull the trigger. It's a very exciting prospect for the pro PvP folks, because man, that could be some interesting fights if those bridgers have to come through combat fit. Let's move into host highlights. My highlight was having a big Nurgle fleet. We had a max form fleet. I posted about it a month in advance. I tried to hype it up with multiple pings. In the meantime, we're going to bring out our Nurgle doctrine. We got a massive fleet for our standards. We got 33 in fleet at our height. That had over 10 Nurgles in the fleet, plus a lot of key support roles. Like, I think we have 4 or 5 Deacons, 6 Daredevils, multiple Command Destroyers, even some Interceptor Scouts for tackle. It was fantastic. Unfortunately, we really didn't have amazing options for fights, but as I was moving to Thera to try to hook up with the fleet because I got stuck the night before, we did run into a Lord of Worlds camp that did not have a scout on the other side of their gate. And so the fleet came in and we cleaned up a nice Praxis kill, a curse, a few other odds and ends. On the way back from that, we ran into another Thero Nano fleet, and we managed to fight like a Nano Navy Omen, a Nano Navy Augur, I think a Forthrus Fedmax, something like that. I forget if we actually caught that one. I don't think that we did. We did catch a fair number of them, and that was a lot of fun. Very difficult to hold them down because they were on both sides of the gate, which meant our fleet, which is an RR fleet, had to split in half. Very dicey. A lot of players, you know, hadn't been in the Nurgle fleet because we had some new folks join. That was the whole reason we were doing it. So they found it very stressful, but very interesting. And then things only got more stressful from there as we found a pricey ESS and we sent someone in to go claim it. As we did that, the defenders showed up and showed up in force. Facts, 2 Balgorns, like some battle cruisers in there, said some Vedmax, not Vedmax, Drekovix, a few other bits and bobs, a Devoter. And it was dicey, you know, we were thinking, wow, that is a lot. And I looked at our DPS, I looked at what they had, and I realized, man, we definitely are going to have to jump some stuff off. But I figured we had a fair chance of doing it. There is one Balgorn and one Praxis in particular that looked particularly juicy. So we warped the fleet in, and the first thing we did was try to micro-jump them. But unfortunately for us, the Praxis and the Balgorn had both started their own micro-jump cycles just as we landed. So they micro-jumped just before we micro-jumped them with the portal. So we did not end up next to them, unfortunately. That was an inauspicious start to that fight, because things only went downhill from there. This is on me. We got bogged down trying to brawl on top of their facts. I was trying to see maybe if we could overpower the fax's reps with all the Nurgle damage that we had, but we were just not quite there. We came close to killing a few ships, but they would always get pulled back. We tried another spearfish, or not another spearfish, another jump away while everyone was balled up. Well, unfortunately, the Hick was on his game and kept pointing our command destroyers as they were spooling up, so that didn't work. And eventually they started getting wise and timing the newts and primaries such that they were popping our daredevils before we could rep them. And we started picking up more losses. The Nurgles and the command destroyers were all holding for the most part. I think we lost 2 or 3 Nurgles over the course of like a 15-minute fight. But it was not great. We eventually started moving the fleet out. Eventually it was slow going because we had people tackled, but we balled up on them, kept them repped until they pulled far enough out that they could escape. We tried to do another spearfish, but they warped away just as we landed in position. If they hadn't warped, we would have caught a huge chunk of that fleet and probably balanced the fight out. But again, they were just a split second ahead of us on the timing for those jumps. And overall, we lost the fight. I think we lost about a bill. They lost maybe a couple, I think like 1 or 200, something like that. It was definitely fairly one-sided on their end. It was a great fight. I was pretty happy with how our fleet did overall. They were just a little bit better and a little bit heavier, better equipped, and got a little bit lucky from time to time. It was an awesome experience. Artemis?
Before I get into my highlight, while browsing the Nolar kill board to look for the VR that you were talking about, I found Dalv just solo dropping his Panther onto a Kronos and winning. Wow. Congrats, Dalv. Like, that's some serious freaking balls. I mean, granted, the Kronos was literally like no rigs fit, railguns, so not the sharpest tool in the shed. But that still took some balls to drop on. So,
dude, Dalv coming back in general, he has been on a tear. That's right, a contract kill too, 2.2 bills worth.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm.
My host highlight, bit of a bittersweet one, realizing that back in the day when Noir was in its hiatus, I was part of the network in Great Wildlands. Doing our moon mining thing, got a bunch of orcas, and realize now that they're all more than doubled in price with the recent industry changes, but they're also trapped in NullSec that I can no longer access.
Oh.
So I have billions and billions of ISK sitting in a station that I'm considering asset safetying out. Maybe I try and broker a deal to get them out. Maybe I sell them a place. Haven't decided yet. I also have some orcas also elsewhere in HiSec that have now almost doubled in value. So I'm pretty happy about that. But yeah, that was my bittersweet highlight. My wealth unexpectedly increased, but it's non-liquid at the moment.
That's well said. I'll get some shout-outs. Shout-out to our Golden Elite members, Mark Havoc and Kestrel Swainson. Thank you for continuing to support the show. If you want to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/DOW, Decorations of War, you can subscribe and become a Golden Elite member. Join our exclusive Discord and get access to all sorts of cool stuff. I also want to give a shout-out to AughtSmarted. He's one of our EU FCs. He has just been fantastic. This is his first year with us. He has led a number of recent European time zone contract fleets on mining escorts and a few other things. And he's done a fantastic job and just generally been a great driving force for good in the corp while I'm asleep or while I'm at work. So thanks so much, Al. Love you, man. You got a really bright future in our organization. Keep at it.
My shout out goes, I'm actually changing it. My shout out is going to all the Noir bros who are still in Noir, still doing their thing, up to some awesome stuff. I should mention to the listeners who may not know yet, I have left Noir. It's not really like I left on good terms, still happy with Noir. I would love to be there and would love to fly in it. I'm just not in a position where I can commit the time to get the sort of fights and the sort of content and also to just be a good Noir bro. Certainly from my perspective, like everyone in Noir is super supportive of our members who have real life things come up and who do get busy. But maybe just like my OG Noir style, I don't want to be that guy who's sitting in the Discord doing nothing and not participating. So I left, joined Brave Empire, which is like their HiSec non-war deckable alliance. It seems like an interesting opportunity to learn industry and mining, which has had some recent changes. It's something I've always wanted to do, but never had the motivation to do so. Also super casual, so it works well with the way that my current ability and time works. And so interesting to see where that goes in the future, but definitely like shout out to Noir. Really happy about all the stuff that you guys have been doing lately. Would love to come back as things change in the future.
Yeah, and I hope you do. And I hope you bring some of those brave dudes with you. That's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll for this episode. Like I said at the top of the show, Noir is recruiting, and if you're listening to this, we could use a few more good mercs. Join CafeNoir.ingame for more info, including a link to the network's Discord, where you can find out more information and join us for a fleet to see if it's a good fit. Wherever you are and whoever you're flying with, good hunting, listeners.